Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This week, California fires rage. Trump recognizes Jerusalem. Al Franken and Moore resign. The president attacks the FBI. Roaring wildfires across Southern California. 200,000-plus people evacuated. Here's Matt Gutman of ABC News.
They're dumping everything they have on this fire. You can see it from the helicopters. You can see that hose over there. Right behind me, they're blasting away at this fire with whatever they can, trying to save these homes.
President Trump broke with decades of U.S. foreign policy with his announcement on Jerusalem.
I have determined that it is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
And Minnesota Democratic Senator Al Franken forced to resign after being accused of sexual harassment. He went out noting the irony.
I, of all people, am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office, and a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls campaigns for the Senate with the full support of his party.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Kimberly Atkins, Stephen Henderson, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you see in the fires, the Jerusalem move, the FBI attacks, the wave of congressional resignations? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Kimberly Atkins, chief Washington reporter and columnist for the Boston Herald. Kim, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Happy to be here.
From Detroit, Stephen Henderson joins us. He's the editorial page editor of the Detroit Free Press and host of WDET's Detroit Today. Stephen, it's great to have you with us again.
Great to be here, Tom.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Kimberly, and Stephen.
Our thoughts go first today to Aztec, New Mexico, where we had yet another school shooting. They locked down. The reports there to the New Mexico government says, governor says, of students hiding in closet, in teachers' offices, under desks. Nauseating to think of schools to have to do this, but it happened. Two dead. The shooter apparently dead as well. Details still murky there. 15 people were told injured. I know everybody wants to talk about Al Franken and Congress, and we will, but can we go first to Jerusalem? Here was President Trump on Wednesday announcing that he had recognized it, a move that would, as the capital of Israel, a move that would move the U.S. embassy there, he said, from Tel Aviv, upending almost seven decades of American foreign policy, complicating any peace deal between Israel and the Palestinians.
Today, we finally acknowledge the obvious, that Jerusalem is Israel's capital. This is nothing more or less than a recognition of reality. It is also the right thing to do. It's something that has to be done.
He calls it reality, the right thing to do. A lot of American allies did not go there, including British Prime Minister Theresa May, criticized President Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem, said the ancient city should be ultimately shared between Israel and a future Palestinian state. Leaders from around the world have criticized the decision.
The status of Jerusalem should be determined in a negotiated settlement between the Israelis and the Palestinians, and Jerusalem should ultimately form a shared capital between the Israeli and Palestinian states.
Kimberly Atkins, is this a shrewd foreign policy move, a recognition of reality, or a gift to political supporters, conservative supporters of Israel, and white evangelicals in this country by Donald Trump?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. I mean, we could see this move coming for some time since President Trump was elected. There was seemingly a clear shift away from a two-state solution in Israel, and that seemed to be perfectly fine with Benjamin Netanyahu, one of the first foreign leaders to come visit President Trump in his administration. So in a way, this wasn't completely surprising. It's also something we saw the president say several times yesterday. This was a promise that was made by so many other presidents, but I'm going to be the first one to keep it. The president likes superlatives. He likes being the first to do something. He likes scoring what he sees as a political win. But there seems to be some uncertainty about whether he fully grasps the fallout for this, how this impacts our allies, how this impacts people in the region and the ultimate prospect for peace, which, of course, he has tasked his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, at trying to achieve, just how much more difficult this move is going to make it. But it seems he has decided that the short-term political win and victory is more worth it.
Stephen Henderson, how do you read this? Watching from Detroit, here's a move that presidents, yes, they've talked about it. They've promised to do it, but none have done it. Donald Trump has. Others have not because, you know, they wanted the U.S. to be seen as an honest broker. I mean, we see where the U.S. has really stood here, but that was always the formal position. The Palestinians saying, what about justice? What about our claim on East Jerusalem? How do you look at the whole thing, Stephen?
Well, I mean, so I sit here in the home of the largest population of people descended from the Middle East in this country.
In Michigan, your corner of Michigan there, yes.
Absolutely. And I have heard a lot from them in the last few days about their absolute anger over this and their feeling of absolute betrayal by the president. I mean, this country has maintained a neutrality on this issue for a really long time for good reasons, because it is disputed and because, of course, it stands in the way of any sort of brokered peace in that region. Putting your thumb on the scale here, firmly on the side of the Israelis, says to everyone on the other side that their rights don't matter, that their lives don't matter, that their deep connection to that city doesn't matter. And the fear that I hear from people here is of the cost, right? The cost of violence, the cost of lives that will be lost as a result of this decision. And so there's no, in my mind, I can't come up with a rationale for having to do this. I also can't come up with a rationale for the timing. Did he consult with anybody else about this, I think, is the question. Anyone in the U.S. intelligence community come out and say, hey, let's do this. This is a good idea. Mm. I mean, it's another instance of this president's sort of erratic and irresponsible nature.
Jack, Stephen Henderson says erratic and irresponsible, but responsible to who, you might say. I mean, he's got big backers. Sheldon Adelson was right there in Trump Tower. Casino billionaire who has supported this, white evangelicals around this country who have been for this. The notion of an honest broker, Roger Cohen writes in the New York Times today that Trump put paid to any notion that the U.S. is an honest broker between Israel and the Palestinians. But he also says this, I don't know anyone who believes that. Cohen writes, America supports and favors Israel over the Palestinians. Boom, Jack.
Yes, and I suppose that's what Mr. Trump would say in defense. Let's not have any pretense about this. But you know, it's an example. It's a paradigm of the way in which the president governs for a faction. The national interest has been established over 70 years. This is a delicate, inflammatory issue. It has to be held out for just the right moment in the peace talks. And the president, to reward a faction of his supporters, has
or two factions, Jack, or two factions.
Or
you got the evangelicals
factions
in there, plus, you know,
religious in any case.
Yes.
And you know, it's essentially using U.S. foreign policy to pay off his domestic supporters. And you know, there was available a kind of deal on this that could have been worked out. Martin Indyk floated it some months ago, which would have involved essentially the U.S. saying, we're going to move our embassy right now, not in when we have it built, to West Jerusalem, to a building there. And meanwhile, we will say to the Palestinians, happens if final status, if something can be worked out and final, when a peace can be arranged, that we will move our an embassy to East Jerusalem to recognize it as your capital. In other words, that
no such nuance here. No such nuance. And it's done. Nuance, sledgehammer, everybody's got their own opinion when it comes to what's happening on Capitol Hill. And Al Franken, he announced his resignation yesterday from the Senate floor, said it would come soon. Eight women have accused Franken of sexual harassment. Members of the Senate, led by New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, asked him to step down.
I am announcing that in the coming weeks, I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate.
Kimberly Atkins, lordy, lordy, there is a wave here. You got John Conyers. You've got Franks out of the Republican Party, Trent Franks. Al Franken, the most attention on that this week and the spotlight really on this. Did you think he would go? What does it mean that he's gone? And what about his parting observation that though he's gone, there sits Donald Trump in the Oval Office and there sits Roy Moore running for the Senate?
Yeah, well, on the former point, I mean, it seemed pretty clear, at least it, particularly from the standpoint of Democrats who said that they were going to have a zero tolerance policy for sexual harassment at the Capitol. There was no choice but for Al Franken to go. I mean, the only surprising thing is that it took, I think it was eight allegations finally to for the dam to break and for leadership to finally go to him and say, look, there's no other way out here besides the door. And so that allows Democrats to finally sort of claim some moral authority. And, you know, look, the fact that it took them a little while to get there with Al Franken was a little problematic. If they were on the House side, for example, it was a much quicker, more swift action to urge John Conyers to leave. He didn't want to leave either. But the difference between those two things drew charges that race was a factor and other things. It was a problem for the Democrats. So they finally realized, look, we have to have zero tolerance means zero tolerance. And so he had to go. But Al Franken was really surprisingly defiant in his exit. I mean, up until now, when these allegations were made, he sort of pointed out that, you know, women's views are to be respected and they need to be listened to and taken seriously. And he almost expressed regret for saying that in his speech, saying that that painted him to be as it made him seem like he was admitting something he didn't do. And he maintained that he wasn't doing it. And he really attacked the president and Roy Moore and others who have done, you know, much, much worse things, arguably. Well, not in the case of Roy Moore, there's no argument there, but that they are still in the mix and they are being held to the same standard that he is.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. California burns. Jerusalem recognized. Russia out of the Olympics. Congress roiled by resignations. Franken, Conyers, Franks. Trump, the president, endorses Alabama's Roy Moore. Doug Jones still very much in that contest, but we'll see on Tuesday. Kimberly Atkins is with us from the Boston Herald, chief Washington reporter and columnist there. Stephen Henderson is here from the Detroit Free Press, host of WDET's Detroit Today with Stephen Henderson. Jack Beatty's here, and you can join us. What are we witnessing with these resignations in Congress, Franken, Conyers, Franks, and beyond? Do you see what Franken notes with irony that he is gone or going while Donald Trump and Roy Moore still stand? And what about the president's endorsement of Roy Moore after nine women have come forward on the record to say that he harassed or worse them most when they were in their teens? Democratic Michigan Congressman John Conyers, longest-serving member of the House, stepped down after several allegations of sexual harassment, former employees. Conyers denies the allegations, announced his retirement on the local Detroit radio show, The Mildred Gaddis Show, Tuesday, said he's proud of what he accomplished.
My legacy can't be compromised or diminished in any way by what we're going through now. This too shall pass.
Never said resign, said retire. Stephen Henderson, how's this being taken in Michigan, in Detroit?
Well, I mean, I think it's a tragedy for anybody who's been here for any length of time. John Conyers, I always say I grew up here in Detroit in the 70s and 80s. John Conyers is a hero, right? And you don't use that word lightly, but it fits with somebody like him going back the 53 years he served in Congress. But, of course, before that, John Conyers as a civil rights activist before he ran for the House was a notable influence on the path toward justice and equality in this country. And so the idea that the end of his career looks like this, I think is a deep wound for people here in Metro Detroit. At the same time, I think it echoes the things that are going on around the country, and I think it's clear that in his case, the motivator here was really this deal that he cut with one of his accusers where he took money out of his office fund to pay that person for a no-show job. I mean, can you imagine what the Ethics Committee hearings would have looked like on that? Not to mention, the Department of Justice. I mean, how many times can you go down to the federal courthouse and read through indictments and see the phrase no-show job? Mm-hmm. But also lurking in the background here is this $17 million that's been spent settling these claims or claims like them for other members of Congress. And I keep waiting for us to get to the place where we say, well, let's see what that all looks like. We've seen just a little bit with Representative Fahrenthold, who had an $84,000 settlement paid out of it. But we don't know where the rest of that money went or for what. I think that's the bombshell that's waiting to go off on Capitol Hill.
Maybe a lot of bombshells. You've got people speculating about potentially 40 more members of Congress vulnerable to this dynamic. Forrest in Lexington, Kentucky. Forrest, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I wanted to tell you again, I told you before, you got the greatest show on NPR.
Thank you, Forrest. What do you see?
My question is, what's the protocol moving forward on either side of the aisle? I just, as a voter, I don't understand. Like in Al Franken's situation, did any of the accusers accept, like if they all accept the apology, should he still resign? It's just there's no level playing ground, between the parties, and it's hard to understand how to, where does this go from here? There's no system of this.
Forrest, I appreciate your call. I mean, Kim, let me bring that to you. And Forrest, thank you very much. I mean, you might say level playing ground. A lot of women might say that's exactly what they're pushing for here. And system, you've got the silence breakers on the cover of Time magazine, Person of the Year, the Me Too movement, essentially saying we've had a system whereby assault and serious sexual harassment were overlooked for years. At the same time, Kim, you've got people like Forrest looking on and saying, what's actually how does this work? It's sort of the due process question here, Kim.
Right. I mean, look, this is something that I think members of Congress, as well as people in all kinds of employment, in public and private sector workplaces across the country are dealing with right now, exactly how to address this. And there is the question of due process, which is, I'm an attorney. That's a legal concept. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to Congress, that's not a court of law. And this is a place where you want people to represent. You don't necessarily want people representing American districts and the country if they're committing these sort of acts. So the Democrats have decided on a zero tolerance policy. And that's what they're trying to carry out now. And that's why initially, just waiting for an ethics investigation while allegation after allegation after allegation continues to pour in was no longer tenable for the Democrats. And there's a moral reason for that. There's also a political reason for that. They want to maintain the high ground vis-a-vis the Republicans who have people like Roy Moore or Donald Trump or others on their side. You see the Republicans struggling with this, too. I mean, when Congressman Franks announced his resignation, there was about an hour that we didn't even know what it was for.
He was apparently soliciting staff members to be surrogates. He and his wife were having trouble conceiving, and maybe one of his staff would help.
Yeah. And so even before we knew the facts, he was already out. And in that case, it wasn't a situation where someone was sort of dragged, kicking and screaming the way we've seen with some other lawmakers. Mm-hmm. Everybody's wrangling with this right now. There is no protocol because they're trying to figure out the best way to deal with this. But your point is right. One of the problems is for so long, there has been a system in Congress as well as many other places where the status of where the power is wielded by men. It's an old boys club. Men are in power, and women were more often in a position to be harassed. And so there's a thought that, hey, it's better to overcorrect right now than to sort of miss this moment and be on the wrong side of history.
Jack, what about Al Franken's parting thought on the irony here? Michelle Goldberg writes today in the Times, Franken's on his way out. Roy Moore, Republican of Alabama, may be on his way in. He stands credibly accused of molesting a 14-year-old whom he picked up outside her mother's custody hearing, of sexually assaulting a 16-year-old after offering her a ride home from a waitressing job. He's got the president's endorsement. I mean, and before Franks, now you've got a Republican out as well. But by and large, Jack, and she says, you know, look, all those who've exposed sexual degradation deserve our gratitude and admiration. She says, but ultimately, the cultural currency of the Me Too movement is not a substitute for political power. The incendiary rage unleashed by Trump's election needs to be directed back at him. Otherwise, only those who already advocate women's equality will be forced to grant it.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, Trump's endorsement of Roy Moore, that's a day that will live in ignominy. It passes understanding, you know, in any other sort of grammar of what we accept as president, this would be so far beyond the acceptable as to be ludicrously unimaginable. But Michelle Goldberg goes on to point out something in the polling that gets to Forrest's question about lack of system. She points out that Democrats, this is Democratic rank and file, by and large want their politicians held accountable. Republicans, by contrast, just want Democratic politicians held accountable. She points to polling that seems to show that. And that is a very toxic situation.
A majority of Republicans said Franken should resign, but only 31% said Moore should drop out.
That's exactly right. That's the lack of moral system, if you will, and both parties are tribal, but the Republican Party now seems to be in a new phase of tribalism.
Jacqueline in Macon, Georgia. Jacqueline, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Hi.
I'm calling because I'm very hurt by what has taken place. I am a strong and loyal Democrat. I am a stronger supporter of Al Franken. I do not ask my congressman to be my moral authority. I can take care of that. But I do expect my representative to fight for me and fight for the issue that I care for and to be articulate and aware of what's happening when they are in a committee meeting. Al Franken is all of that. Al Franken helped to give me air. He gives me life. And I'm so hurt. I'm so angry that he is stepping down.
Jacqueline, what about the women who have stepped forward to complain and say, Al didn't treat me right?
Those women could have taken action against Al Franken when those acts took place. If they felt strongly about what Al Franken done to them, they would have taken steps then. I am a woman. If someone does something to me that I think is wrong, I'm going to take corrective action then. I'm not going to worry about what my job status is.
Jacqueline, stand by. Kimberly, jump in here if you would. And Jacqueline, please stand by. But Kimberly, you know, you hear Jacqueline, she says, I'm more interested in having this politician represent me in the big fight that's underway in Washington than go home.
Yeah, I mean, this Jacqueline represents a contingent of supporters of Senator Franken who are very upset and angry that he did have to step down. I think it's for those people, that juxtaposition between what's happening with the Democrats and what's happening on the Republicans, it hits them the hardest. But at the same time, as I said, the Democrats have taken a stance here about zero tolerance in the face of an issue like this.
And does Minnesota stay in the Democratic column after the next Senate race there to replace Al Franken?
Yeah, I mean, it looks, look, it looks like it's a Democratic
Trump
state as of
there.
Now, but that was the point I was going to make. Mm-hmm. There are Trump supporters in Minnesota, and there are potential political consequences to this. But I think, as somebody who in the past, who has not always felt in a position powerful enough to speak out, when I've been in positions throughout my life where I've suffered sexual harassment, mm-hmm. You do have to give protection to women. And I think maybe the anger should be at you put your trust in your elected officials and you want them to live up to that. And perhaps this is a situation where that didn't happen.
Jacqueline's going the other way. She wants her political interest defended, but clearly we've got people going different directions here, and Al Franken headed out. Susan in Columbia, Missouri. Susan, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I echo Jacqueline's sentiments, and I think there's been a huge lack of discrimination in how the Al Franken allegations have been treated in the press by pundits and by the Democrats in Congress. The only thing we have proof of is that photo, and he has admitted to that.
You mean that where he's mugging over the woman's breast on the airplane while she's asleep? Yeah.
Exactly. And everything else was alleged. And frankly, I don't believe the women. I know that's not politically correct at this moment, but I
don't. No, it's not.
And I've been sexually harassed. I'm 65 years old. I'm a lesbian. I'm a feminist. I'm not someone who easily defends men's boorish behavior. But I feel like the Democrats have made a huge mistake in this situation.
Susan, we've got it, and I really appreciate your call, your particular perspective. In particular, if I may get one more, and I'll bring it to you, Stephen and Jack. Mike in Providence, Rhode Island. Mike, you're on.
Tom, thanks for taking my call. Whether it's late or better late than ever, you could see this as a political calculation on some level. The Democrats see millennials, especially millennial women, and the zero tolerance for this type of behavior. That you see one party, zero tolerance, and the other party, whose president has been credibly accused and is supporting someone for senator just for political reasons, who has been credibly accused of molesting a 14-year-old girl and a dozen other women.
So what's the bottom line, Mike? What's it add up to then?
It adds up to one party realizing where the political winds are going and the other party just putting its head in the sand. Well, it's leadership. You see Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan desperately trying to get more out of the race. You see Jeff Flake actually writing, a Republican senator out of Arizona, writing a $100 check to Doug Jones. They see what's happening. They don't want to be the party that supports sexual predators, sexual harassers.
Mike, we've got it. Let me take it to Steve, if I may. Stephen Henderson, who's reading this right? I mean, right now, it's more Democrats who are dropping. But, you know, Mike says down the road that this will work for the Democrats.
Well, maybe it will and maybe it won't. I mean, I think one of the things that we're witnessing is a clash between the political and the cultural moments, right? Mm-hmm. The short-term politics and the long-term politics could look different for both parties depending on what they do here. And I think there are a lot of calculations on the political side that say, you know, win where you can and don't give up ground to get your agenda through. But will that cost you down the road? And we won't know, of course, until we get there. I think on the cultural side, what we're seeing is a transformation in the way that we deal with these things, that we deal with these allegations. And at the same time that we need to be super vigilant about taking these things seriously and investigating and dealing with them, we also have to be mindful that if something is not true, we need to call that out as well. And that's becoming more murky, I guess, and difficult as you see each of these different stories sort of unfold with their specific
details. I don't know if it's about truth or where you set the bar. I mean, you've got a stark difference in Alabama. Here's Roy Moore defending against allegations that he assaulted underage women at Fairhope, Alabama on Tuesday.
If you knew what kind of battles I've been fighting, you wouldn't want to be where I am. In fact, if I wasn't here, I wouldn't want to fight those battles. But when God puts you there, you have nothing else to do but to stand.
God put him there. Doug Jones, his Democratic opponent, they're neck and neck right now, took aim at Roy Moore in Birmingham, Alabama, same day.
I damn sure believe that I have done my part to ensure that men who hurt little girls should go to jail and not the United States Senate.
Of course, he prosecuted the Ku Klux Klan in the Birmingham bombing that killed schoolgirls. Jack, where does this whole cultural tsunami go?
Well, you know, in Alabama, polls, and I don't know how accurate they are, but they show 70% of Republican voters do not believe the women who've accused Judge Moore.
Nine women, on the record.
Yeah, yeah. But their reasoning is somewhat, I don't mean to be provocative, similar to our last two callers. They are basically saying, look, his personal life is not at issue here. What we want is this vote. What we want is this man to stand up for our issues. And it's a sort of echo of the standard the Democrats have invoked to protect Bill Clinton years ago.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, graduate students around the country protested the Republican tax plan, which would steeply increase their taxes. Here are students at the University of Texas at Austin Wednesday. They're afraid they won't be able to afford graduate school, and they are very organized.
Our situation is already unacceptable.
Our situation is already unacceptable.
I deserve the chance to finish my PhD.
I deserve the chance to finish my PhD.
All kinds of battle cries. In a news conference Tuesday, International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach announced Russia's ban from the 2018 Winter Olympics.
The Russian Olympic Committee is suspended with immediate effect. Individual clean Russian athletes will be able to participate under strict conditions at the Olympic Winter Games Pyeongchang 2018.
Russia out as a nation. Clean Russian athletes under strict guidelines in individually, not in national uniform, not under their flag. On Wednesday, Time Magazine's editor-in-chief Edward Felsenthal announced Time Magazine's Person of the Year.
The 2017 Person of the Year is the silence breakers, the voices that launched a movement. This is the fastest moving social change we've seen in decades.
And what we've been watching for days now, apocalyptic images out of California. Here's Ventura County resident Barbara Rader looking at the damage of the Thomas Fire. More than 400 buildings out in Ventura County, talking with ABC News here.
It's devastating. Sorry. I'm grateful we have our home, but I'm very sad for my neighbors and the way my neighbors look, and it's just horrible.
We're going to look more at those California fires on Monday. Santa Ana winds blowing hard there, and L.A., San Diego, just unbelievable scenes coming out of California. We're looking at a week in the news. California burning, Jerusalem recognized, Russia out of the Olympics, all the stuff in Congress. Kimberly Atkins is with us, chief Washington reporter and columnist for the Boston Herald. Stephen Henderson with us from Detroit. Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial page editor of the Detroit Free Press, Jack Beatty's here, and you can join us. What do you think of President Trump's attack this week on the FBI? Is that a sign that the heat is on? Michael Flynn and him on sanctions at the inauguration itself, we'll look at that. The president's attorney saying that the president can't be charged with obstruction of justice. Kim Atkins, what about this week? President Trump, by tweet, coming down like crazy on the FBI. You could almost call it his FBI. I mean, we hate to because it's for the country, but it's under his authority, but saying it's in tatters. What is up with the president going after the nation's leading law enforcement authority?
Yeah, it's really striking to see the president of the United States attacking the top law enforcement agency of the federal government in that way. But what it evidences is something that folks have been telling me they've been concerned about for a long time, which is as this Robert Mueller investigation moves forward and gets closer and closer to President Trump's inner circle, there might be this reactive impulse on his part to try to stop it, to try to discredit it. And in, you know, the biggest thing that could happen is an attempt to try to remove Robert Mueller, to fire him. And there's been all of these contingencies of what happens then. What do you do? Members of Congress have tried to act to protect Robert Mueller from being fired. But all of this is a part of a pattern with this presidency, is that anything that is seen as an obstacle, anything seen as an opponent, the president attacks it. It attacks its credibility, attacks it, even if it is an American institution. And And we are seeing that happening here. And we saw FBI Director Christopher Wray, a Trump appointee, stand before Congress and defend that agency and say that it is hardworking people who put their lives on the line every day and that the agency is not in tatters, really echoing the same defense of the agency we saw James Comey give in his congressional testimony and sort of have to stand up against the president and defend his people.
Here's Wray yesterday, director of the FBI, appointed by Donald Trump, saying he's proud of his law enforcement agency.
There is no finer institution than the FBI and no finer people than the men and women who work there and are its very beating heart.
After the president said the FBI was in tatters, Steve Henderson, you're watching from Detroit. What do you think of the whole direction of the Mueller investigation at this point? Does it look to you like something that's going to come to some dramatic head? Are people still like waiting on the edge of their chair or moving on? I mean, he's moving pretty quickly here, but still.
It's moving pretty quickly, and we've got, you know, once someone at the level of Mike Flynn is making a deal and obviously then cooperating with investigators, I think—
Who was the president's national security chief.
Right. And one of the closest advisors during the campaign. This is somebody with an incredible amount of understanding and knowledge of what went on and what didn't. The fact that his sentence is going to be so light, the fact that his son is not going to be charged, those all point toward some important information that he's giving to Mueller. I still think that the big questions here are about what Mueller does if he gets to the president. Can he indict the president? Can he even for something like obstruction of justice? Is that allowable under our constitutional system, or does he have to refer all this to the House of Representatives?
I mean, the president's own attorney said no. He's above that.
That's his job.
But then Ty Cobb, the other attorney, said no. That's not the point.
That's their job, is to say that he can't do it. But we also know that in the articles of impeachment that were drawn up for Richard Nixon, the obstruction of justice was one of the things that was in there. In the articles of impeachment for Bill Clinton, that was in there too. So, you know,
but Mueller can't make Congress impeach the president, and
he can't. That's the rub, right? Yeah. Is this Congress going to take what Robert Mueller gives them and act on it if it comes to that? And I think that's what everyone's waiting to find out.
Jack, what are you watching on the FBI Mueller front this week?
Well, if Mueller hands a bill of particulars to the Congress, it'll go first to the House Judiciary Committee. And on the evidence yesterday, that looks like a committee that would not vote to impeach Mr. Trump, depending on how the severity, of course, of the charges. Director Wray was badgered from all corners by the Republicans on questions of, well, here was an FBI agent who Mueller fired who tweeted anti-Trump tweets. You know, he expressed his anti-Trump opinions.
But Mueller got rid of him.
He got rid of him, but this is emblematic. And one congressman said, you know, if Mueller were to fire every one of his team who has anti-Trump sentiments, then there'd be nobody left there. And Sean Hannity runs this circus every evening with, you know, essentially putting out this whole scenario of it is a fixed, rigged investigation, and no matter what it comes down, it's going to be poison. They're coming up with the Uranium One scandal again. They're saying that Mueller, of all people, is implicated in that because he was FBI director at the time. So therefore, he can't possibly judge in this case. I mean, it goes on and on.
But Jack, is it fixed in the other direction? Because the House is very unlikely to take up impeachment, and does Mueller have a way to legally go at the president?
It is a gray area indeed, and what it does is it sets up that next year's election as having really one dominant issue, impeachment.
We had California Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff on the House Intelligence Committee going after Donald Trump Jr. this week, who was testifying but refused to answer certain questions about a conversation with his father back in that summer of 17 when they were talking about the meeting with Russians there. He said they had attorney-client privilege. Here was the Democratic Congressman Schiff.
He acknowledged having discussed the June 9th meeting and the emails that went into establishing that meeting after those emails became public. He acknowledged discussing that matter with his father, but refused to answer questions about that discussion on the basis of a claim of attorney-client privilege. In my view, there is no attorney-client privilege that protects a discussion between father and son.
Kim Atkins, you're an attorney. Is that a clam we can't open?
It certainly is. I mean, that it's no way that that's how the attorney-client privilege works. You can't just have a lawyer in the room and have a conversation with another person. If anything, that sort of would cut away from a claim of attorney-client privilege if Donald Trump Jr. was not the client of the attorney. I mean, when I practiced, I was careful that even when the person who would come into the law office to water the plants was in earshot, that I would close the door if I was talking to my client, because the attorney-client privilege is very easily pierced if you give it away, if you talk to other people. I mean, it just sort of seemed that Donald Trump Jr., from what we understand from his testimony, was just trying to use every method that he could to not give information, whether it was what I call the Sessions defense, which is I don't recall. It was a lot of things that he doesn't recall, claims of privilege that may or may not even exist. This is something that we also see Attorney General Jeff Sessions do when he testifies before Congress. It just seems that they are, it seems to me, acting very carefully, because they know at this point everything that they say is going to be checked and cross-checked by Robert Mueller and his team against what they've said in the past, against what other people said, and against whatever other documentary evidence they have. And the more inconsistencies there are, the more trouble it's going to mean for them.
Mueller reportedly going after Deutsche Bank records now. They were a major lender to Donald Trump, civilian Donald Trump, when many others did not want to lend to him. Of course, threads there that go Russia-wise in all kinds of directions out of Deutsche Bank as well. I want to turn to the government shutdown that is not happening right now, but by the time we get close to, what, Christmas Eve, Kim, this could still happen. The president sat down yesterday with Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer. Here he was.
We're all here as a very friendly, well-unified group. It's a well-knit-together group of people. And we hope that we're going to make some great progress for our country. I think that will happen.
Kim, what's looming here? Could we have a Christmas shutdown of the government, long holiday for federal employees?
I mean, look, it's certainly possible. I mean, there are some really big sticking points that it's tough at this point to see how the Democrats and Republicans come together. I mean, it's not just about how much so the spending goes to defense and non-defense. That's everyday stuff. It's things like President Trump is going to insist on funding for his border wall, which is a non-starter for Democrats. Democrats are going to insist that a DACA fix, a fix for the Dreamers who came here as children by no volition of their own, that there is something attached to the spending bill that deals with that, and Republicans are saying they don't want that. Those are big sticking points at this point. So we are very, very far away from any kind of permanent deal.
And, of course, we had this week in the case of Michael Slager, who shot Walter Scott. We've all seen that video so many times after the traffic stop and the taser and all the rest. He will go to prison for 20 years. His attorney talking about that talked with reporters after the former police officer was sentenced, violating the civil rights, they found, of Walter Scott, fatally shot in 2015 after that traffic stop. Here was the attorney.
Today is a historic day for civil rights, particularly in officer-involved shootings. This is one of the largest sentences ever. Being found guilty of second-degree murder and obstruction of justice. It's historic.
North Charleston shooting there. We all saw that video again and again as tased and running away and the police officer firing. Yesterday, Walter Scott's mother, of course, spoke to reporters outside the courthouse in South Carolina.
I thank God for all the prayers that went up for our family. I thank God for the attorneys. I just thank God for everything that he has done. My soul is rejoicing right now.
Stephen Henderson, this case takes us back to that period when it just felt like we saw one unarmed African-American man being shot after another.
Yes.
This video was everywhere. Did you think at that time we would see an outcome like this? Baltimore wasn't like this. Others weren't like this. But here it is, 20 years from Michael Slater.
Well, and I guess that's the whole point, right? I mean, this is what's supposed to happen. In circumstances like this, a police officer is engaged in misconduct that results in someone's death. It's a crime. In other cases, we're not seeing that. And that's the tragedy here, is that you want to be happy about this. You need to be supportive of the outcome. But you also need to continue to question why this isn't the outcome in so many other cases. I mean, how many times have we seen on videotape officers overreact? And that was the thing here. I mean, this person was not posing any threat, running away. You shoot him in the back. Think of Eric Garner in New York, standing on a street corner. He's merely refusing to leave, but he's wrestled to the ground and choked to death. Think of Freddie Gray, tossed into the back of a police vehicle. I mean, all of these things are similar. And the outcomes are, and that's what we got to keep focusing on.
Kimberly Atkins, what do you see in this one? Is there a change here? This has a feeling of a big deal, and yet there have been many of these cases.
Yeah, I think there's a hope that there is a change here. There's been a great frustration that there seems to be no method for justice for people who, for the families of those killed, unarmed people killed by police officers. Yet, you know, you have police officers on the other side that can mete out justice immediately on the street. But look, this case was so egregious. I mean, we had this videotape by this bystander who thankfully was there. We saw this officer shoot someone running away from him and then pick up the taser and put it next to him so that later he could claim that it was self-defense. I mean, this is the most egregious case you could possibly imagine. The punishment seems to fit the crime here, and it shows that, you know, justice can work both ways. We need our police officers to police our communities. We want them there to keep us safe, and we're happy that we're there, but they also need to be accountable when they commit a crime.
I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. Kimberly Atkins, Chief Washington Reporter and columnist for the Boston Herald, looking at this very busy week. Thanks a lot for joining us, Kim. Great to have you.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Stephen Henderson, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial page editor at the Detroit Free Press, with us today from Detroit. Stephen, always great to have you with us.
Great to hear you again, Tom, as well.
Great to be with you. And Jack Beattie. Jack, have you made your Bitcoin billion yet, Jack?
It's in the mail.
In the mail? I'm sure it is. Bitcoins, it's raining Bitcoins out there, or people wish. Jack, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
On Point is produced by Brian Amaral, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, Allison Poli, Tanya Raleigh, and James Ross, with help from Gretchen Voss, Catherine Proctor, Anna Bauman, and Whitney Leonard. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.